also, I mean, if it comes up, we'll talk about pangolins, which are the new elephants.
I feel like one of the very first conversations you and I ever had
was like me being like, the pangolins are killing the pangolins.
I will never forget the night that you discovered this issue.
Yeah. It was the same day the Metal Hour story broke.
Wept openly.
Like hard.
Wind, water, hot, go planet!
By your powers combined, I am Captain Planet!
Captain Planet!
Welcome to another episode of Gaia's Gang. I'm Ariel Van Cleve, joined as always in studio by...
Andrew McCardell.
And...
Emily Smith.
And this week we're talking about the episode, The Last of Her Kind.
Oh.
And I know, it's kind of a sad episode title, but an uplifting show by the end, right?
And a good episode.
And a really good episode. So we'll get into the episode in just a little bit, but first, Andrew, why do we come in here and do this all the time? As often as we can.
Hell yeah. We rewatch an episode of Captain Planet, reminisce about nostalgic things from the 90s and our youths, and re-raise the issues that come up in the episodes.
The three R's.
Correctamundo. That's what we do here. First, why don't we talk just really briefly about the last episode and do a quick recap?
Yeah,
we always
look
to Andrew for that one. It did suck a lot. We hated it. We all hated it collectively.
Last episode was called The Conqueror. Opens with a meteorite crashing toward the Earth. The Planeteers are somehow already en route to the disaster when they discover that it's happening, so we'll just blow right past that. They try to put out a giant fire on an island to rescue the animals there. Can't do it. They're too weak. And so they summon Captain Planet. He takes care of the issue. It turns out that the meteor is a spaceship inhabited by a intergalactic bad guy named Zarm. Voiced by the venerable Sting.
Whom you're not really a fan of, which we found out.
Yeah. Lukewarm on Sting.
Mm-hmm. 5 out of 10, I think, is what it was.
Yeah. 5.5.
Fair enough.
Still an F. But Zarm bribes 4 of the 5 Planeteers, not Mati, who sees through Zarm's BS.
That's right.
But 4 of the 5 of them are bribed with the promise of enhanced power via... Iron Fists, which are gloves that look like the Nintendo Power Gloves. They have to take off their rings to wear the Iron Fist. It turns out... I'm just going to wrap this up real fast because this episode sucked.
Yeah.
It turns out that Zarm is... he had been on another planet, but he's a former spirit of the Earth, just like Gaia.
Yeah.
And he's trying to usurp Gaia's place by luring the Planeteers into abandoning the Path of Peace,
yeah,
which will make Gaia mortal... And potentially cause the Earth to die or let him assume power or both.
Yeah.
And so he sort of tricks them into thinking that they're going to destroy nuclear weapons with their stronger powers. In reality, it was going to trigger like worldwide nuclear war and retribution. And they, I don't know, they say they end up beating him and Gaia fights him and they save the day and they don't abandon the path of peace and
right,
all is well. It was bad. The characters, and we'll talk about this in this episode, but I realized today... The Planeteers basically didn't have their own story in this episode. They had hardly any lines of their own, except for Mati interacting with Gaia.
Yeah.
It was just this attempt at a big epic thing with Zarm, and it fell completely flat.
Totally did.
But we did all collectively decide that we're anti-nuclear war.
Yes.
So that did come out of the episode.
Yes. And I feel like if it weren't for the episode, no, I think I would still be anti-nuclear war.
I think so, too.
I didn't need to be persuaded.
Yeah, there was a lot of really not great things about the last episode, but this one, significantly better. Significantly better, I would say. But first, before, again, just going to keep teasing to the episode. We're not going to get there yet, but we're going to go and we're going to, we heard some questions, comments, and concerns from a few listeners.
That's true. We had 2 listener comments. We are possibly down to 2 listeners.
Hi, guys.
Hi, friends. Mm-hmm. So from our friend Matt, what did Matt have to say?
Oh, he just expressed shock and surprise at the continuing just deluge of giant celebrities that are voices on this show.
Yeah.
So last week was Sting. Obviously, we've talked before, Whoopi Goldberg is Gaia, LeVar Burton is Kwame.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the other big actors? The villains are mainly these people, Meg Ryan,
yeah,
Martin Sheen is coming up soon, Ed Asner is Hoggish Greedley, Jeff Goldblum
is
Verminous Scum. So it's really wild. And these people are not It's not like they're just on the come up or something. They are giant freaking stars.
Right. They're like legitimate stars by the time that this show is on the air in the 90s.
So Matt suggested that we try and get the booking agent on the podcast. So we'll work on that. Okay. I nominate you because
I can
you
figure
know
out
how
some,
to do this.
Right.
I don't know. How do you usually interview people? Dumb luck. We also had a comment from Cousin Danielle, but I have no idea what it means. It says, okay, so clearly Diane Warren equals bangers with a Z. Does anyone know what this means?
I'm glad it was with a Z as well. Yeah, a banger is like, you know, just a really hip.
It's a hip tune, right?
It's a hip track. It's a hip track that all the kids like.
Who's Diane Warren?
Diane Warren is who we talked about, the one who wrote that Aerosmith song that broke Andrew's heart, that mm-hmm. made it to the number one. Their first number one hit was Don't Want to Miss a Thing, mm-hmm. as written by Diane Warren.
Mm.
So she was being silly in her Diane Warren equals bangers comment.
And she wrote My Heart Will Go On also. I'm just going to Google really quickly because I think she has like a huge number of big hits.
Because typically a banger would be something that's a little like not in this realm. It would be there's that episode of Parks and Rec where Tom talks about how he only ever plays bangers. But like, you know, like Jay-Z.
I see.
It's like tracks like that.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, you're right. This is working out really well to have some, you know.
Elder millennial.
Moderately aged millennials trying to explain bangers with a Z. We're getting it done, though. We're okay.
She said 32 top 10 hits and 9 number ones on the Billboard Hot 100.
List some of them.
I'm working on it.
Yeah.
We've got slow Wi-Fi here in the studio.
How dare you.
After Tonight by Mariah Carey. I don't know that one.
Oh, okay.
Because You Loved Me by Celine Dion.
Yep.
Because You Loved Me.
See?
Bed of Nails by Alice Cooper. Can this list might not be right. No, songs written by Warren with original artists, co-writers, and originate album. Yeah, okay.
Dang.
Cheap Trick, Cher, Mary J. Blige. Oh, How Do I Live? Also,
Leanna Rimes. Of course.
How do I live without you?
That's good.
I need to warm up if I'm going to sing so regularly on this program.
We just explained what bangers are, and I think we did a really good job.
And we just explained...
Danielle will let us know if we were right, I guess.
And we explained what bangers are by explaining what bangers are not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Woof. All right, so last of her kind. Let's get into the episode. This is episode 7 of the first season of Captain Planet. And we open up to somewhere in Africa. There's a bunch of elephants roaming around and animals that are just having the best time ever and being silly and goofy and being with their families and... It's all very sweet and adorable.
Like Disney vibes.
Yeah.
There were birds flitting about a rhinoceros.
Yeah, like everybody was getting along beautifully and having just the best time ever. But then these gliding cars appear out of nowhere with these two bad guys.
Strong Back to the Future. Yeah. It was like the flying car from Back to the Future 2.
Yeah.
Or I guess the end of Back to the Future 1 is when it first takes off. I want to make sure we get that right. Anyway, the DeLorean, when it flies, that's kind of what these look like, but they also sort of looked like Professor Xavier's chair that floated.
Mm-hmm.
They were flying around like that.
Mm-hmm.
But they looked like just big cars.
Yeah, they're just big cars, and they're loaded up with these two baddies. And one of them has, was it an Australian accent or British? I couldn't tell.
It was British. It was like a pretty bad, almost Cockney accent. Like, oi!
Yeah, he was like trying to do the bad Cockney.
I didn't know this at all. I was distracted by his suit. He had this amazing suit that was trimmed in tiger print, I believe. The lapel was in tiger.
So yes, but we're talking about one of his henchmen right now. Not we're not to the villain.
We're gonna get to the main villain.
Okay, hold that thought.
The suit is really good, and it's understandable that you'd be excited to get to it.
100%. Nobody's mad about it. So their whole deal is like they're gliding in, and they're rounding up. They're like being cattlemen, basically. They're rounding up all of these elephants to like walk into a pit or to walk into the slaughterhouse. They also said that at one point. Like, I couldn't tell which way the animals were going, but they were definitely leading them to a certain direction.
Yeah, there are... darker, there's darker language and imagery in this episode than we've typically seen. Slaughterhouse is invoked, killing the elephants. There's a lot of elephant bones throughout the episode. It's pretty harsh. I dug it.
Darkness.
Not just, it was, you know, it was cool to see it get a little bit more
real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. So they are able to rally all together with these elephants. They but then there's one that's left behind. The little baby elephant was left behind, and the mom was taken as part of this. So that was sad and foreshadowing to later when we see that elephant again. But we do a quick cut over to the kiddos who are just having the best time hanging out on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
And like Linka is summoning a bird with like a thing. What was that? What was this thing that she had?
Oh, I think I looked away. Oh. Well, I didn't. Was it her musical thing? Remember?
Yeah,
in
but
the
before,
first episode,
but
she was doing something like that.
I know, but she had like a whole keyboard or something before, and now it's just like a necklace that she has on her. She was like a necklace, and she was just like, and then
all of a sudden
there was a bird.
I missed that too. I thought they were windsurfing, and I was all like, oh man, it's March in Seattle. Should we go somewhere else where there's sunshine and water
where I can windsurf?
Big windsurfer here. But that's, I think I got distracted because I was thinking about vacation.
Well, fair enough. Either way, she summoned a bird and talked to this bird for a second. Then Wheeler and Mati were on windsurfing together. And then Wheeler's like, oh, Linka's birthday's coming up. I want to get her something really cool. Can you read her mind for me in order for me to like figure out what she really wants?
Yeah, that's not problematic at all.
Instead of just like, I don't know, context clues and being a good person to discover what the apple of your eye would want as a birthday present.
And Wheeler is
He's once again,
a resounding dick in this episode in a whole bunch of different ways. And also, they make him very dumb.
Yes.
Very stupid in this episode, which he always kind of is, but he's more just a reactionary. In this episode, he seems to just be complete, like a huge moron.
Yeah.
And it starts, like right now, they're windsurfing and he's like, hey, what should I get the Rusky Babe for her birthday?
So
and there's a lot of that, and he's just,
And then eventually, like, they fall off their little windsurfing situation. They're in the water, and then Linka makes fun of them, and then Mati makes fun of Wheeler, and Wheeler's pride is definitely hurt because it takes nothing.
Yes, easy.
Because he is a classic insecure male. So after we kind of discover what's going on with them, trying to have a little bit of fun, then they're pulled out of the fun by Gaia, who says, oh, you got to go on this mission. They're poaching elephants over in Africa, like all of Africa, not like a certain country, just Africa.
Yes, just one big continent full of elephants. Yep. More on that later.
So they're tasked with going to figure out a way to stop these poachers from doing the thing that they're doing. Then as we are, when we get back there to where the kids have arrived and they're trying to fight these guys, they've got their little plane. The guys have the little floating cars. There's like a little battle between the two of them where they try to get them off course to keep from rallying all the, corralling all of the elephants, which mixed results.
Yeah. Oh, but so they get their briefing, and Gaia shows them, you know, scenes of this slaughterhouse that Loot and Plunder has, where he's getting the ivory. So they are, the whole issue is made very clear to them during the briefing of elephants are being killed, rounded up and killed by Loot and Plunder, who's taking all of their ivory. And while they're en route to go confront Loot and Plunder and try to stop this from happening, Wheeler gets the bright idea that, oh, I'm going to get Linka an ivory necklace for her birthday.
Right.
What chick wouldn't love an ivory necklace? And Kwame, I thought, oh my God, is this going to go out? And Kwame's just like, what the hell is wrong with you? He doesn't say exactly that, but he's just like, are you kidding me? He's like what?
Like, do you know what we're doing here?
And Kwame has to say, well, you're going to see the cost, the real cost of ivory. It's like,
that's right.
Motherfucker, you've already seen it. You saw it on the crystal screen. You saw bones of elephants.
Right. But now he's like, He needs, I think Wheeler, out of all of them, is the one who needs to, like, experience something in order for it to have any kind of impact on him. Yeah. Like, he is the, he's kind of the outlier of the group when it comes to who's really on board with being a Planeteer.
Yeah.
Like, he's consistently confused or doing the wrong thing or saying the wrong thing. Focused on the wrong stuff. His priorities are all over the place. And then and then he gets in this plane. They're going to go save elephants from poaching and protect their ivory on the elephants. And he's like, oh, well, while we're here.
That ivory's really pretty. That's real nice.
Just going to get some ivory while I'm at it.
Did he not, maybe had this not been explained at this point? Like, had it, the reason people were poaching elephants, there's kind of two problems with elephant populations. One is the ivory poaching, and the other is, like, environmental or habitat destruction due to development. Maybe he was focused on the environmental.
No chance. The briefing involved elephant bones.
Yeah, you're giving, I feel like I understand why you'd want Wheeler to not be such a dum-dum, but Wheeler's definitely a dum-dum.
I'm afraid you're right.
And he's just been the most consistent one of just like, why are we even doing this? Like, all the time.
And you don't really need him to be like that. It's not like the audience might be confused about what's going on. You don't need a character to sort of learn along with the audience. Everybody knows what's going on here. We just
Okay, so maybe there is something to that part of it. Maybe there was some idea that they had of like, maybe we do need to have the dum-dum in the group who's just like, I don't understand anything or why we're even doing this.
Beaten over the head.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think maybe Wheeler's playing the role of like your weird uncle at Thanksgiving, right? Who's like, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see a problem
with
it.
He's a foil. He's a foil that allows you to kind of handhold someone through the environmental issue.
And they're like, oh, now I understand what's happening. That's a bad thing. Now that I've experienced it and seen it firsthand, now I get it. Okay.
It's pretty wild. There are a couple more moments like this.
I know.
Like, it's not like he gets it while they're en route. Like, oh, shoot, sorry. Yeah, you're right. The elephants are being killed. There are a couple of more points of education for Wheeler.
It takes till the end of the episode that all of a sudden it dawns on him. Like, oh. Yeah. So, Wheeler, okay, maybe you're the strange uncle in this group. So as they arrive and they're trying to get these guys off the path of corralling all of these elephants, somewhat successful, but then they wind up calling Captain Planet to really help finish the job of getting them off course and messing up their rides, basically. So they call him, he shows up, and he does it with like a tornado out of nowhere.
Yeah, and a couple things about it. So Kwame saves an elephant that's trapped in a pit. And he's kind of, you know, this is in the way that, and I guess we'll get to this later again too, but similarly problematically in the third episode, was sort of Gee's quote-unquote almost like going home episode.
Yeah.
It was in Thailand. It's not at all clear that she's from Thailand. She just happened to know the kid that lived in that village, right? And so she kind of took the lead in that episode, and Kwame sort of does that in this episode as well.
Right.
It's not like they're going back to his village or anything like that. Just, you know,
his homeland of Africa.
Of all of the continent of Africa. but he takes the lead, and I realized when this was happening, I was like, oh, again, one of the reasons that that episode last time was bad is that the kids didn't really have anything to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about like Captain Planet versus Zarm versus Gaia, etc. Mm-hmm. And the kids were kind of just there to summon things and show off their powers. And in this episode, the kids really do have things to do. And it's good. Like Kwame, you know, actually saves an elephant. They do summon Captain Planet early, but I thought that was a much better.
Yeah, you're right. It was good that there was at least some sort of power that was used by the kids where he was like, look, there's a way that I can make this possible. So let's just go ahead and do this first. But now that's only one part of the bigger problem. So we need additional support. That's where we're all going to come together. Again, going to come together and make it work.
Something else that was weird in this sequence was so they summon Captain Planet. He turns into a tornado and kind of blows away the flying cars and destroys them. And while that's happening, so these two henchmen have been fighting the Planeteers. They know it's the Planeteers. And we've talked in previous episodes that it seems weird that these villains are all on the up and up and they understand who Captain Planet is. They know who the Planeteers are. They're all totally aware of what these things are. And we're like, how the hell could they know? But they do.
Mm-hmm.
This henchman, after fighting the Planeteers and being blown in a Captain Planet tornado, says things like, there are no tornadoes in, you know, sub-Saharan Africa. What's going on? What's that voice that's quipping at us during this? It's like, You should definitely know that that's Captain Planet. It's weird that you don't.
Like, you want to know your enemies.
And Loot and Plunder, the main villain, pretty shortly after this, just refers to him as Planet, as though they're on, like, a first-name basis or something, so he knows.
Yes. But then he even, like, and then he was calling them, what, environmental midgets. That's what, that's what he was calling the the Planeteers.
Yeah, that's changed since the 90s. I don't think we can, I don't think we use the M word anymore.
No.
No, we definitely don't.
No. So that's, that was fascinating to hear. But you're right, like, there's not a lot of, they've become known entities, and Loot and Plunder, the guy with that magnificent suit with the trimmings, like
the tiger trimmings.
The tiger trimmings, like, just to show what a gross person he is. Like, his suit has tiger trimmings, which you know that he got from a tiger that he probably killed with his own hands if he could, because he's a monster.
Monster.
Absolutely. So...
Oh, so yeah, Loot and Plunder. I guess we should talk about who this is.
Yeah. He's the kingpin, this empire of poaching.
Yeah, he's kind of slick. He's more slick than the villains have been in the past.
Yeah.
And pretty good villain, or at least good for a showing. He wears this light blue suit with, like, tiger lapels and cuffs and everything, like we've said. And he's got, like, a long reddish ponytail.
He's got a sweet pony.
But, like, a slick sort of, like, 80s American Psycho looking type vibe about him. And he's just a bad, bad guy. But he's voiced by James Coburn, who I think was a big star. Had been in a ton of movies, but he was much older at this point. He did go on to win an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor in 1999. For Affliction, I think, was the movie. But he was in Westerns. He was in The Magnificent Seven and a whole bunch of movies and things back in the day. But, I mean, for us anyway, and people our age watching this show as kids, probably not. James Coburn wasn't, you know,
right,
a huge...
Wow, James
never heard of him.
But I did see, in looking at his Wikipedia page...
Sorry, James.
I just thought this was really funny. To give you a sense of James Coburn, who does a really good job in the episode. But this says, in the new Biographical Dictionary of Film, critic David Thompson states that, quote, Coburn is a modern rarity, an actor who projects lazy, humorous sexuality. Which, I felt that watching this episode.
Wait.
Did you guys not?
I mean, I feel like there was definitely something going on with Loot and Plunder. Like, he definitely had a presence, more so than the other baddies have had.
The other baddies are also, so, Hoggish Greedley is just kind of gross and goofy and absurd.
Yeah.
And he's got a Beavis-y sidekick. Verminous Scum is, like, nefarious and not fully human.
Yeah, he's a rat.
But also kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dr. Blight, Meg Ryan's character... is a little bit more deadpan, but funny, and has Mal, her computer sidekick, who's funny. She and Loot and Plunder are easily, I think, the two best, most interesting, least slapsticky.
Yeah,
maybe
villains.
For episode 10, we can do a complete ranking of the Captain Planet villains.
Ooh.
Well, you guys can do that. I'll do a ranking of the environmental issues.
that feels on brand. So as we meet Loot and Plunder, and we realize that he has a powerful, sexy vibe, apparently, as Andrew likes to point out.
just nodding. I realized that wouldn't come through on the podcast.
Didn't hear it rattling. So as that's happening over here, and then the kids over here are wandering around in, like, looking for clues, looking for ways to be helpful, looking for whatever they're looking for, and they come across the baby elephant that we talked about in the beginning. And this baby elephant is sneezing a bunch, like, hidden behind a tree.
It's making noise, and they can't see what it is,
right?
And but it's obviously some kind of an animal or something. But
it's
Wheeler,
it's clearly an elephant. Just for the record, it's making the same noises as the elephants were making in the intro.
Yeah. So, but Wheeler, nonetheless, aims his ring at the bush behind which this elephant is hiding and says, I wrote this down because I thought it was ridiculous. Come on out or eat fire. And Linka says, wait 1 second, Yankee. We're back to Linka saying things like comrades and calling Wheeler a Yankee and him saying Rusky Babe and all that sort of stuff, which I'm glad we're back to that. But what a fucking idiot.
Right. Like, come out here. I'm going to set everything on fire.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Okay, Wheeler. Such an American thing to do. But as they just move the branches out of the way and they discover that it's an elephant who is with a cold, I guess.
Achoo!
So then they start calling the elephant Sneezer.
Initially, I wasn't into the nickname. I was like, he just sneezed one time. Give him a break. But then, I mean, now it's kind of cute.
I was super confused.
Like, and Andrew thought the elephant already had a the name Sneezer.
I swear to God, I thought Mati read its mind and discovered that his actual name, like, it thought of itself as Sneezer.
Okay.
That is
for several minutes, Andrew is confused about why the elephant is named Sneezer, you guys. And I let it go because I was like, the elephant just sneezed. There's nothing more to this story.
Right. But then, I mean, I understand why there'd be a little confusion, because then he goes to, like, read his feelings and learns about a bunch of stuff. Like, oh, you lost your mom because the bad guys who came. And then he's like, we're gonna find your mom, little Sneezer.
Which, this is the thing about elephants, the largest land mammal, but high socio-emotional intelligence. And, like, the behavioral studies of elephants are super interesting in that they behave the same way. Like, when a family of elephants is reunited, like, the kids, the cousins run off and play, the, like, adults have extended greeting rituals, etc. Anyway, so this is one of the reasons I guess we love to love elephants, is because they are emotionally very similar to humans in a lot of the rituals and ways they act.
Right. So we can, like, get it, like, oh, okay, so you're sad that your mom's not there, and, like, you understand that there's something wrong.
Exactly. So that's a little scientific basis there for the Mati.
Right, and it's not just like a cartoon thing. It's like, no, this is true. Like, this is probably a way that would happen. It's not just a Dumbo thing. It's like, this is an elephant thing.
Exactly.
So they try to figure out a way to get Sneezer reunited with his mom.
I still think it's cute.
Oh, I think Sneezer is a lady elephant.
Oh,
isn't Sneezer a girl?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
It doesn't really matter. I think she's a lady fent.
Well, if Sneezer is a girl or guy, regardless, let's try to do
that would be a cow, just if we want to be correct about it.
Oh, no shit.
A cow is a female elephant and a bull is a male elephant. I'm serious. They're looking at me like maybe I'm making this up. That is factual information. I'm
no,
sharing.
That sound. I
No, I was sitting here familiar. Thinking like what Google search on some evening prompted you to get to, like, I need to know more things about elephants. Like, that's where my went.
I love elephants.
Oh, well, there
just,
you go.
Generally. Also, I did some research after watching this episode.
Because you also just love elephants so much. So why not?
Mm-hmm.
It's a good reason to.
Yep.
So we're back at the little compound with Loot and Plunder. And he's wandering around wanting to figure out a way to get rid of the kids. Like, we gotta destroy these children because they're gonna destroy me and I can't have that.
He has a tank called the Snatcher.
The Snatcher, that's right. So the Snatcher goes, like, he gets in this thing and he wants to go nab the kids and the baby elephant Sneezer to get all of them rounded up together. And they're like, oh, well, we'll just open up the ground. Like, Kwame's like, I'll just create a pit. And that's gonna, it's never gonna work. So he opens up this pit. The thing falls down into it, but then it climbs right back out. And everyone's like, oh, shit. Seriously, dude? So they run into a cave. They get into the cave, and turns out it's a trap. So Gate comes down. Then Wheeler's like, it's cool, man. Like, I will just burn these metal bars down. But then he drops another gate, so it's not going to work.
It's fireproof.
It's like fireproof.
And it's fireproof.
Well, this sequence was funny and appropriate, given how annoyed we are with Wheeler. Mm-hmm. Well, this was interesting, too, because Kwame, I think, says that they can't summon Captain Planet while they're in the cave.
Right.
They're all together.
Right.
Maybe they have to be in sunlight.
Do they have their rings?
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they, like, is it, like, a block. It's like a cell tower situation.
Yeah, there's some lead actually in the ore in the cave.
They have no signal inside the, mm-hmm. the cave.
So whatever, let that slide. But appropriately for this episode, everyone but Mati, who just has heart power, so he wasn't really going to be much of a use with this anyway, and Wheeler works together to get them out. So mm-hmm. Gi summons flowing water, Linka uses wind somehow, and Kwame changes the earth to basically fire a whole bunch of water at the doors and blow them off the, mm-hmm. the front of the cave. And I was like, oh yeah, good. Everybody but Wheeler is helpful.
Right. Because again, Wheeler is just along for the ride.
Is the elephant in there?
Yes.
With them?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I feel like Wheeler is just... like, he just wants to set stuff on fire. He's like a little pyromaniac, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, oh, it's okay. I'll just light your ass up, or I'll light up this door, or I will burn this elephant because I don't know what it is, so I'll just set it on fire. He's out of control. They shouldn't have given that guy firepower because he's crazy. Mm-hmm. So they're able to get out, and then what? They go after...
They summon Captain Planet.
They summon Captain Planet. And they talk. That's right. They summon Captain Planet again. We see him again. And then Planet turns into, like, water? Does he, like, hangs out with the kids for a second and then when he goes to go after a loot and plunder?
Oh, yeah. I think he wipes out the snatcher that the henchman is now driving right. as water. It says something about doing the laundry.
Gotta and go the do the dirty like, laundry. Not again, that's right. Because he had a bad experience with Captain before.
Oh, the henchman also got punished. The two henchmen, one of them is like a bad British villain, and the other one is African. Mm-hmm. But they get punished by plunder earlier in the episode because he holds them accountable for the cars being destroyed and says he's not going to pay them.
Right.
And that becomes relevant in a few seconds here for when the kids meet up with one of these henchmen. But the bad British henchman is like, whoa, not again, when he's destroyed in the snatcher. But then Captain goes to the compound where Loot and Plunder is holding all of the right. elephants, and he starts blowing the doors off.
And he's like striking the doors with like lightning, mm-hmm. which
pretty
was
cool.
crazy. And just destroyed everything except for the animals. And he kept saying things like, behind door number one, elephants. Door number two, more elephants.
I like that.
And this was kind of an odd Captain Planet sequence. Because usually when they summon him at the end of the episode and he just wipes out the bad guy, it happens kind of quickly. He's super overpowered. And that seems to be happening here. But he blows, like, door number three is Loot and Plunder.
Yeah.
And Plunder is all disheveled. His pants are ripped. He seems to have been caught in the destruction from the lightning bolt. But then a few seconds later, he's completely put back together up in a tower with two other henchmen.
Mm-hmm.
And Captain Planet is still trying to deal with him. And I was just like, how did we get from there to here?
Yeah, it's like, I thought we handled this. We didn't handle this?
Yeah.
This is how slick this guy is.
He's very slick, mm-hmm. yeah.
He's incredibly slick. Mm-hmm. So one of the other henchmen, the African henchman, who's so concerned about money for his family because otherwise they're going to, perish? They're going to perish if they don't get...
starve. How will I feed my family?
So it was like, you know, life and death here. So there's a real concern because Kwame was trying to reason with the guy.
And Kwame's saying, don't worry, we'll teach you how to make a living.
Right.
I hate this storyline, folks. Yeah. I do not like it. This is classic Western media portrayal of Africans as helpless victims. It's just a really common storyline that is rather dehumanizing and paternalistic. Mm-hmm. Like this idea that, oh, really, the poor African character has no agency to improve their own life. They're poverty stricken. They need advice and coaching in order to improve their own life. This is problematic. This is why we have this idea that's so common in Western portrayals of Africa. It's bad for stereotyping. It's kind of enhances these ideas of white privilege. It's misinformation. It's why we feel afraid of foreigners. It's not great. My favorite version of this is there's an Onion article that also says, let's see, the title is Tens of Thousands Dead in Ongoing Africa. because you just see a lot of this exact narrative. And even the things you cover, the stories you cover about Africa, the headlines that are made are about, like right now, it's about Ebola. Mm-hmm. It's about civil war in Sudan. Mm-hmm. I don't know what are other big Africa storylines right now, but this is what's covered. And even in cartoons, this is the storyline we hear. So not a fan of this storyline. There are a lot of development jokes to be made here. Kwame is basically USAID teaching some new farming techniques, bringing in some new soil. Anyways, boo.
I liked that tear. That was good.
Yeah.
Rant done. Please call me for more.
But I think like having that back and forth between Kwame and the henchmen, where Kwame was like, look, dude, you don't have to do it this way. There's other ways to do it. Why don't you try this? Why don't you try this? And the guy's like, no, like, this is the living that I'm doing. This is how it's going to be. Get over it. It's like, and I'm going to get that damn elephant. So then he goes after after Sneezers, right? Sneezers, whichever. So he goes after the elephant, and like everyone's just sort of letting him like hit Sneezer with that.
He's got a big ass stun gun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, that was mean.
It was violent. I was like, and they did it twice. I'm like, Jesus, it doesn't need to happen two times. Like, I understand that this is not good. Don't do it again. So he's leading off Sneezer, and this is the part that I was like, no, I don't like this. The henchman turned around his entire mentality because Sneezer stopped him from walking into a pit full of elephant bones, which was clearly meant for all of the elephants that they were poaching. And that's when he was like, oh, maybe I should rethink this whole thing, because you saved my life, Sneezer, from falling into a pit. So what? That's what did it? Not rational conversation about like, we'll do something else. Like, we'll let's talk about this. What can we possibly help you with? It's the elephant.
This felt a lot like the Green Book to me. People.
Oh, get after it.
Right. The whole story of the Green Book. We will have. But the whole thing about the Green Book, right, is it's a story about white guy, driver, who learns not to be racist by having nice, friendly interactions with a single black man. Same thing here happens. Learns to love elephants after a single friendly interaction with Sneezer.
Right. So he's like, oh, okay, well, you're a good elephant because you saved my life.
Also, should I just compare racism to elephants? Very bad. Moving on.
But having this guy change his worldview based on the actions of a single elephant.
We're right. He goes from defending his choices to Kwame, who, while powerless, does try to stop him and is physically, you know, because Captain Planet is off fighting loot and plunder, so Kwame has no powers, but he still tries to stop him, and this guy is just bigger, stronger, and knocks him down and zaps the elephant and takes it.
Right.
But yeah, he defends his choices, and then upon being rescued by the elephant, says literally, I'm not proud of my life.
Right.
Like, full 180.
Right.
It is a cartoon, guys.
Yeah.
I know, but damn. Like, that's such a weighty thing. Like, I'm not proud of my life.
Yeah.
It's one thing to be like, man, I really should rethink some stuff here. No, it's, I'm not proud of my life. Like, Jesus. Okay. Well, then in that case, I'm glad that the elephant was there to...
Sneezer saves the day.
Totally. Like, Sneezer makes it all possible for...
Good work, Sneezer.
Like, things to go off mildly well.
So then what happens? Are we done?
So Captain Planet is... Almost. Captain Planet...
Excuse me.
I promise. Captain Planet is dueling Loot and Plunder, and Planet, who can fly, is on the ground, and Loot and Plunder is up in a tower with two of his henchmen. Mm-hmm. And in a callback to what we've seen in some of the earlier episodes, they try to shoot acid rain out of a hose at him.
Oh, yeah.
Which, why is it acid rain?
It's not rain. It's just acid water.
It's just acid, I think. But it misses.
They love shooting acid out of various things.
Yeah.
All and of
it,
them do.
It misses. Captain Planet dodges it. He says some quip, who knows what.
Yeah.
And then he can't find Loot and Plunder for some reason. He's disappeared from the tower and Captain Planet can't find him.
Right.
And this is so that the henchman with Sneezer runs into Loot and Plunder.
Right.
And they're the ones who ultimately stop and capture him. Sneezer grabs Loot and Plunder with his trunk.
That's
he tries
right.
To run
he,
away.
He sweeps him up and he's like, gotcha. Because again, Sneezer saves the day.
Yes. So fine. They wanted to set it up so that Sneezer could save the day and the henchman
elephants
who's
are
redeemed.
Highly yeah. intelligent, mm-hmm. highly emotional creatures. And they, are, of course, they're going to save the day. They're going to fix everything because we're idiots and we can't do it. I am fully okay with this plot.
I'm fine with this, yeah.
But it was just amusing to me that Captain Planet all of a sudden lacked like object permanence
right.
and couldn't track like a man in a tower.
Maybe he mistook Loot and Plunder for a hat.
For a tiger.
That Oliver Sacks disease or whatever. Like,
so I think it's
facial
it's
blindness.
Buried in this sequence also. That's a real issue. Wheeler, somewhere along the way here, has said that he has discovered the real cost of ivory. It's not, he says, it's not just money, is it? Oh, am I one stupid dude? Yes.
Yes,
you are. You are very mm-hmm. stupid.
You are so stupid. Like, you are so stupid, Wheeler. You should be ashamed. You should not be proud of your life. Like, you should just be ashamed. It's taken this level of, like, this level for him to finally be like, well, why would I want to get her ivory for her birthday? That's a terrible thing to do. Mm-hmm. So after Sneezer captures Loot and Plunder, thankfully, and they're trying to figure out a way to reunite Sneezer with his mom, magically, they're able to make it happen, which is great. Not going to complain about
it. And Wheeler gets to do it.
Yes. And then he also gets to, like, do the little thing of, oh, I didn't get you a birthday present, Lincoln. And she's like, it's okay. This is the best birthday present I could ever ask for, seeing Sneezer and, like, the mom together again. Which, that's very Planeteer of her. So that's great. And I'm not going to complain about that either.
And it's at this point that he says, hey, you know, in America, when a guy
yeah.
gets you a gift, you like, give him kisses or something.
Yes.
And she says, in a very almost like Yakov Smirnoff voice, she says, in Soviet Union, when boys give you fast move, you give them a fast nyet.
And everyone's like, oh, sick burn.
Yeah.
So that's the end of the episode. Everybody just kind of giggling at Wheeler's expense because what else is there to do? And then they do the Planeteer alert, which is a little bit different than when they have been doing it. This one's just sort of part of the show. It's not like a woo-woo thing going on. And they talk about how you shouldn't buy products that cause animals to die in the making of them. So I'm like, yeah.
This one tracks.
This all goes together perfectly well.
It was real refreshing after a I continue to think that the Planeteer alert, the don't graffiti and don't drop your gum wrappers on the ground alert following the nuclear war episode, that they just fucked up and slapped the wrong alert
just
on the end of that thing.
Yeah.
But this one did. It was consistent.
Exactly.
This one was good. It reminded. There still is in a lot of international airports. World Wildlife Fund has like a picture of a beautiful like tiger that says, you know, I'm a living animal, not a rug.
Right.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Same vibe. This seems to speak to people.
Well, and I like that whatever the line was that Guy said, it was like, don't buy products that cost an animal its life. And I think that's a good way to phrase it as opposed to like, the phrasing of it makes it more like, oh, right, that animal is going to die because of a thing that I'm doing, not just like, don't do it if it hurts an animal. Or vague things like that. Like, your actions are causing a problem directly.
Yeah. So this one is a good one to revisit the environmental issue because
yes.
we've kind of had ups and downs in terms of saving the elephants. So my brief summary of the history of the elephant conservation efforts.
Mm-hmm. How you say...
do they say?
The elephant saves these.
So, what year are we in this episode?
1990.
Okay, so this is a year after the ban on international trade was introduced by the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora, also known as CITES. So this was in the 80s, this had become a major issue. An estimated 100,000 elephants were being killed per year, and up to 80% of herds in Africa had been diminished. Whoa. So, like, major, major issue in the 80s. The world community comes together in 89, signs this CITES, and this is credited with doing a lot of good. This allowed a number of populations in a number of countries in sub-Saharan Africa to recover. And so things were looking pretty good after this episode aired. Like, maybe Captain Planet contributed to this idea that we need to save the elephants, right? And why save the elephants? Again, because these are also thought of as keystone species. So these are things, without the elephants, we have major problems from everything from even like flora and fauna are a big, apparently elephant poop is like the major way that a lot of trees and grass species spread, because they eat up to 300 pounds a day of,
right.
They're vegetarian, the elephants. Mm-hmm. So anyways, keystone species we care a lot about. And then we have a major issue in the mid 2006, where countries had essentially been seizing ivory, in order to enforce CITES. And then they have governments have like big stockpiles of ivory and nothing to do with it. So famously, like, the government of Kenya burned like millions of dollars worth of ivory. But in 2006, there was this agreement that allowed a number of African countries to sell these stockpiles to China and legally. So this was okay. But essentially this made it impossible to enforce CITES, because you could no longer tell the difference between legal and illegal ivory. And so in the early 2000s, this becomes a major issue again. And so today, I think the estimates are something like 55 elephants are killed each day. We have major issues both of poaching as well as environmental degradation, kind of making the actual landscape that elephants live in smaller and smaller.
Mm-hmm.
So we're back to having an issue of elephant poaching.
How do you fix it? Like, that's the question, you know?
Yeah, so what's happening now is a number of countries are banning domestic sales of ivory.
Okay.
Which is thought to be important, because part of the issue is it's a little more difficult in sub-Saharan Africa, where there is a lot of poverty, corruption, insecurity. It's a little hard to enforce some of these different measures.
Mm-hmm.
And so controlling the actual market of sales is where it is enforceable, like the US or China, right? This can have a major effect. And so even we've seen recent kind of sell-off of stockpiles happening in anticipation of these domestic bans going into effect. So I think that's one of the approaches that's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And then a number of countries have taken innovative and different approaches to like community management of wildlife. Or in Tanzania, the Selu and Mikumi National Parks have taken efforts of tagging all of the elephants. So they're traceable by satellite, and they can, like, park rangers can see on their cell phone where the elephants are.
Mm-hmm.
This is helping kind of keep them out of danger. So there are a lot of different innovative wildlife management efforts going on in sub-Saharan Africa as well.
Well, that's a lot of stuff that I did not know.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of stuff I did not know. And that speaks to what Captain Planet's all about, too. Right. That's the whole mission of Captain Planet, is to say, well, here's a little thing. Like, here's a big thing that's happening over here, but here's a little way that you can help prevent it from happening are continuing to happen.
Don't exactly. contribute to the demand.
Yeah.
Don't contribute to the demand. And this one's just a particularly good one. I think we had the same issue with Acid Rain, where it was a big issue in the 90s, kind of solved for it a lot. And then we took our eye off the ball. We have emerging economies globally, and this changes the dynamics of the problem, and it's facing us again. So I think the story from the 90s is that it's possible to do good conservation work, and
but you just can't let up on that. Yes, conservation work.
Eyes on the prize.
I think we need a Captain Planet reboot.
Yeah,
I was thinking that.
That might not, like, why hasn't anybody thought about that, or why hasn't anybody got it off the ground yet? I'm sure someone
Let's
thought
call
of it.
Barbara Piles. See if she's up for it.
Be like, now's the time, Barb. Let's do this
it
thing.
It is.
Netflix, they'll buy it. They'll make anything.
Oh, yeah, they will. Got to get that good Ted Turner money, though. Well, then, on that note, we're going to go consider ways to reboot Captain Planet ourselves. And we'll be back with the next episode, episode 8, which I don't know exactly what it is, but
Andrew knows
exactly what it is.
I'm glad that you brought it up, because I almost forgot about this. So I haven't watched it, but I saw the Amazon one-line description synopsis of the episode. Downside is that Hoggish Greedley is back.
Okay.
For the third episode of 8. And when we do our villain power rankings, he's going to sit squarely at the bottom of mine. But the synopsis of this episode is something like, Greedley tries to flush all of the fish out of the world's oceans.
Oh.
Or something. So his past has been try to harvest a bunch of oil, make money. Try to strip mine for rubies in Thailand, make money.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going on with this.
Yeah, what do you get by cleaning out all the fish from the ocean?
Yeah.
What's the end goal?
Nothing good is going to happen.
That's right. And we will be here to talk about it. Good
Break
or,
it down.
Good, bad, or otherwise. So thanks again for being with us for this recap of this episode. And we'll be back soon enough with the next one. But for now, bye.
Bye, y'all.